Willow Creek Springs presents Healthy Living with your host, Joe Grumbine.
And the thing that hasn't changed, you know, almost 10 years ago, I started this show and I thought to myself, well, pretty soon this job will be done. Prohibition will be over and we'll get to go work on something else. Maybe child trafficking or some other really big problem, hunger, homelessness, poverty of all kinds. There's all kinds of things that still need to be worked on. But this is such a low-hanging fruit. Like, it makes no sense that it even happens, number one. It makes even less sense to me that we keep putting up with it. And I think it's just important that we remember that, you know, each one of us matters. Each one of us makes a difference. And we all have skills we bring to the table. Some of us are like me. We just get out there and do it. I don't have any college degrees or any kind of fancy things to hang up on the wall, but I got a lifetime worth of doing what's right and helping people that needed it and taking risks. And I've learned a lot along the way. We have a lot of people that have been part of our organization that are trained medical professionals, that are even law enforcement or ex-law enforcement, people that got every kind of experience. And frankly, that's what we need here, is really to get together as a community. And I believe Sue brings an amazing, sorry, I'm just, there we go. I got the live feed now. So Sue brings an amazing set of experiences to this. And I think that one of the values of this show is that we're able to bring so many different voices. And I believe, I know that when we get a diverse enough group of people talking about something, one of us is going to be able to communicate with everybody out there. And if it's just one of us doing all the talking, you reach your group, you reach your audience. And some people are like, yeah, that guy's the best. And other people are like, can't even listen, right? And so those are things that, one of the reasons that I focus so much on building community and finding the common thread, the thing that unites us rather than the thing that divides us. We live in such a divided world right now, it drives me batshit. I just can't get my head around that we focus so much on the things that separate us and the things that make us different. I think that if we were to take a little bit more time and look at the things that make us similar and together and unite us, and the things that we could do that could help us all, I think we would be better off as a human race. So, Sue, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join us. Apparently, you had a little hiccup last week, and fortunately, we had a cancellation and we had an opening here. So, welcome. I'd like to introduce you and let you introduce yourself a bit.
Hi, Joe. Yes, I was on the show before, I think when you first started, because you said 10 years ago, and yeah, that would be about right. I believe, 2014, because, and I'll tell you what I remember. First of all, let me introduce myself to the audience. My name is Sue DiGregorio-Rosen. I am in the Northeast. I live in New Jersey. I'm about 5 to 10 minutes from the George Washington Bridge, if that means anything to anybody. If not, that's okay. it's quite a different area. Right now we have federal marshals in our subway system, and so it's pretty interesting things that are going on around here. What I want to say about me personally is, first of all, I am a registered professional nurse, or professional registered nurse, however I'm supposed to say it. You get the picture. I've been a nurse for a really long time. I'll give you a little bit more of my history. I think I started smoking weed when I was about 13, 14 years old. I did not grow up in the greatest of areas, but that was okay. My family came here from Italy, and that was okay too, because we ate well. I grew up in that Woodstock, what they like to call the Woodstock generation. Somebody called me that today. They said, tell me about your Woodstock experience. And I was like, well, I went to Woodstock, you know, but then again, we know people scam our Facebook pages and what have you, but whatever. I'm not here to talk about Woodstock. Everybody knows that story. I became a nurse. Oh my God, a long time ago. I had kids when I was very young, and I had two little babies that I needed to support. I went into one of in the 70s, there were some educational opportunity funding programs that were available, and I know that EOP still exists. However, it was difficult because it was new then. So I marched, of course, marched myself into a welfare office and said, "Well, I'm a minority, and I want to be a part of this program, and I want to go to school." And they proceeded to kick me out the door.
Wow.
They said I was not a minority and that I did not belong there. And
Wow.
so I went back in the door and I said, "I am so a minority, and I do so
Yeah.
belong in here." And I went on, the whole premise of, "Hey, my family came from Italy," and I gave them that whole long story, and I'm a single mother, and blah blah blah. So they finally, to shut me up, they shoved me in a room. They had this outrageous man, though, that was he was put on as my counselor. So he asked me, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And I said, "I don't know, pediatric surgeon." But that sounded good. And he said, "That's really nice." He said, "But what do you want to be when you grow up? Because we're not going to pay for that." So I said, "Okay." I said, "I don't know." So he said, "All right. Well," he said, "why don't you try nursing?" He said, "See if you like it, because if you go to school, we can put you in a nursing program. You can get a degree, you can go and be a nurse, and you can go and do your thing, and maybe you'll get tuition reimbursement, and maybe you'll become that pediatric surgeon someday." Well, obviously I did not. I did go right to work. I always worked in trauma and burns and
Wait, hold on
emergency.
just a second though, because really the important, I think that the key to this is really that you demonstrated that, I don't know, willingness to put an effort in, if you will, that seems to be so lacking in today's world. Everybody's got energy to whine and bitch and talk about what's wrong, but nobody's got much effort to actually get in there and walk back in there and say, "Hey, wait a minute," And I think that's the key. That's the key to everything right there. And the weird guy that was a little bit off-putting initially, he actually gave you some good advice, and it sounds like he actually cared about what your outcome was, because he was working with what he had to work with, and he's like, "Hey, well, there's an opportunity here. Maybe that's a good one."
And you know what? You're right about that. But you're right about that, because he was a blessing. He really was. And my career in nursing was great. I mean, of course, I had to take my little kids to school with me and let them play in the hallway when I would be in, classroom, during class. But when I had clinicals, I had my mother. My mother helped me out quite a bit. And from there, fast forward. I did all the recreational drugs that were out there. We had a lot of psychedelics going on. Psychedelics now have become a forefront and have kind of kicked cannabis to the back of the line,
Yeah, isn't
for
that kind
lack.
of strange how quickly that all happened? The
Very.
cannabis battle has been going on since the 30s, but really since about 1971 when the Controlled Substances Act was passed.
Yes.
At this very same time, psychedelics were categorized in that same category, made just as illegal, and people have lost their freedoms and everything over them. But they never really were touted as a medicinal or even a legitimate medical use of any kind. And then all of a sudden, it seems like within the last 3 or 4 years, somebody's like, "Aha, I feel better when I do this."
Yeah, Timothy Leary's not dead.
Exactly. All the merry pranksters and all the good guys that actually, we're out there in the forefront that we're like, "Hey, look what we discovered. Look what we can do with it." And plenty of stuff experimented, played around, but we always considered it recreational because it was fun, right?
It's a
But
lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I've been there many, many times. I plan to go
Okay.
back many, many times. And there's something, I always thought like I probably won't do acid again because it just took a lot out of
Because we're
me.
too old, right?
Yeah, it's a young man's game. I probably won't do
Huh?
cocaine ever again either. It's just too much.
Yeah, I don't want to have a heart attack.
Yeah. We get a little old and those kind of things. But frankly, I don't care if you do. The point is every time I ever did psychedelics, I always said to people, it's the weirdest thing because like you drink alcohol and the next day you feel dead, right? And you just feel like shit. You feel like somebody smashed you from the inside out. But when you do psychedelics, and it pretty much is any kind that I can think of that I've done anyways, when you're in the midst of it, and it could be something very, quick and fleeting like DMT lasts you maybe 20, 30 minutes, or it could be something long and doesn't ever want to seem to let go, like LSD or mushrooms or something like that. And frankly, the next day, I always said it's like the hangover is like, I don't know, a little sprinkle of sparkles on the landscape. It's just like you have a general feeling of well-being. You almost feel a little better than you did the day before. You're a little tired and a little, maybe a little creaky, but man, your face hurts from smiling so much. And what else does that for you or to you? Like you think about it, like all the psych meds, you can almost tell when somebody's on psych meds because they're walking around with a glazed look in their mouth and they bump into
Yeah.
shit. And I'm just, being frank. And you can almost tell when somebody's on mushrooms because they got this shit-eating grin on their face. And you think to yourself, huh, maybe there's a tell here, right? I mean, generally, in my opinion, things that make you smile are good. Just, I don't know, a layman's opinion. What do you think?
Well, there was that song, Things That Make You Go, You're right.
Exactly. Exactly.
I had fun. That's my answer to whenever anyone asks me a question about, even if it's about cannabis, it's like, well, tell me about your first experience. My first experience? I don't know. They told me to just suck it in, take a
Hold
hit,
it,
suck
hold it till you
it
pop. Yeah.
in, hold it. Yeah, hold it in. And I was like, okay, I did. So now what?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you feel good.
And that was kind of like and Joe, I'm sure you would agree with me, a rite of passage for us, right? We
Absolutely.
smoked weed and then we moved on to, other things that we were having fun with. It was the
Explored.
time.
Right. We
Yeah, it was
explore.
the
Yeah.
time. And it was fun, regardless of what anybody thinks about, those dirty hippies and what have you, and now they don't like us anymore because we were baby boomers and what did we do? We created Wall Street or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't keep track of all the names they call us. But
Yeah.
you know what? I'm still me,
Yeah.
and so I belong to an organization. Okay, and I wanted to talk about that for like 2 minutes.
Oh, take
And the
your
organization that I belong to is called the Cannabis Nurses Network. Now, I am one of the founding members. We are a global network of nurses that believe in the medicinal value of cannabis. Okay, so that's how we started off. We started out in patients out of time. We moved on to the American Cannabis Nurses Association. Some of us said, no, this is too, this is not our thing. We want to do our own thing. We want to be like a leader, like have that leaderless kind of socialistic kind of governing body, not
Hold
nobody.
on, real stop for a second there because that's another thing we have in common. I don't know if you know anything about the Human Solution, but when we started that organization way back when, I didn't want to lead it. I just wanted it to happen organically, and it turned out things don't want to be led that way. I mean, it almost always requires somebody to step in and take that responsibility, and
Right.
ultimately, I was the reluctant leader, but at the end of the day, here we are 10 years later, 15 years later, and we're still doing it. So
Yeah.
it's
And
interesting
that's
that
kind of
I
what
from
I
that
think
thought.
that's what happened in the network too, so for me, I by birthright is I'm a grassroots organizer, so I like to be in the background telling everybody else what to do. And I can provoke civil disobedience, but I'm not going to be the one that gets arrested.
I love it.
I'm going to be on the curb. But the network ended up being a really good thing because we got some really interesting people in the program because they were interested. They were interested in the whole cannabis movement, which to people like maybe you and I was never really a movement. It was just something we did,
You're like, what are you doing? Yeah, I just needed to, somebody needed to do it. It wasn't going to do itself.
Until somebody got the bright idea, well, maybe we should try and get this legalized again. Okay.
Figure.
I was all for it. I was like, okay, I can, you know what? I'm great at do organizing. I can do that. So that's the role that I took, throughout this whole journey, I guess you want to call it, that we're on, or voyage, or whatever the West Coast, what do you guys call it? Voyagers? You're all voyagers now.
It varies from week to week. Week to week, we just stay with it. It's we. You're spot on though. It is a journey, and I think that that's important to remember because we have a destination we're trying to get to, and I think a lot of people forgot where that is, and we got about three quarters of the way there, and a lot of people are jumping off the boat going, okay, we did it, we did it, and we didn't do it
And
yet.
we didn't do it yet. It's still a federally illegal substance. It's still a Schedule I narcotic. It's not even a narcotic. Everybody knows that.
Well, you're a nurse, though. Actually, why don't you? I mean, like, there's technical terms for things, right? And a narcotic is a certain class of substance that cannabis isn't. So, I mean,
Absolutely.
even just from the basic mechanics of their declarations as they went waged war on us, they were wrong about everything, and including even the classification of the substance.
And we had a Harry, what was his name? Harry Anslinger and Richard Nixon to thank for that. Because why? There's all kinds of theories of why. I've read them all. You know what? It doesn't matter. They did it. They did it. They closed us down. And what they did was they took everything else off the street except for weed. And you know why? And I guess psilocybin, we can throw that in there too, but not as predominantly as cannabis,
It was never as
because
prevalent.
it's a weed. It's a
Right.
weed. It can grow. Okay. And so we could grow it ourselves. So the black market stayed alive and well. And it became quite lucrative for a lot of different people. And we had all kinds of names. We hear all these fancy names now, Blue Kush and I don't know. Peruvian blue, and it's not even Panama red anymore.
Oh
It's now
no.
it's
But I
Panama
remember the old
yellow.
Acapulco gold and the Panama red and the Colombian.
Maui Wowie and wacky weed and all that stuff,
The old Thai stick. That was my first plant I ever grew.
Oh, Thai stick. Yeah. I can remember sitting on the turnpike smoking a bunch of Thai stick with a friend of mine because we were in a snowstorm and they stopped traffic. So that's what we
I
did.
love it.
But anyway, so where we go forward in this movement is kind of like, we were getting there, because of all of the and it's not a whole hell of a lot. I think there's more research than that's being talked about, because there's a lot of underground stuff that's going on,
So I've
and you
heard.
know some of the states, they came around, like where you live. Okay, I lived in New York for 20 years. I just moved back here 6 months ago, and I didn't, you know what, I it's not that I didn't know, I did know there was no home grow in Jersey for medical plants, for sick people. And then all of a sudden, a friend of mine got in touch with me, and I'm sure a lot of people know him. And he said, "Sue, we still can't do home grows." And I was like, "What? Really? I forgot." When I lived in New York, you could have 6 medicinal what do I want to call them? Patients, medical patients living in a house. Every one of them could grow six plants. That's a lot of weed. Nobody paid attention. Nobody cared. You know what? Worked out fine. And that's just New York. Okay, so I come back to Jersey. They're still protesting in the streets of Trenton over this homegrown stuff. And I'm like, wow, I left you guys with this, you know? You didn't do a good job at all. But you know, the flip side of that is I don't know what the flip side is. That's the most important thing, because I said to a friend of mine recently, who he also is an activist, I said, what is the big deal? Okay, while I listened to all of these politicians and mayors that were all joined together, and they were discussing, you know, the role they play in cannabis wherever they live in Jersey, and finally I said, you know, I got up a couple of times because they were boring me, but I said to them, wait a minute, can I just ask you guys a question? Okay, I was the only woman there, which is not unusual. And I said, did like anybody ever ask why not? Did you guys ask? You know, it's not like you got to reinvent the wheel. All they had to do was take like New York's program, or you know, whoever else, Pennsylvania or whatever. You know, you got states, there's states right around us. It's not like we have to go across the country and call up Joe and say, Joe, put me on the show because we want to know what you do for medical patients, you know? And the medicinal value is there. It's there. It's been researched. It's been proven. It's been smoked. It's been eaten. It's been whatever, you know?
Even the politicians don't argue that point anymore. You know,
No.
10 years ago, the politicians were always standing behind the medical or the federal ruling of, you know, this is a dangerous drug with no known medical uses. And now you don't hear that anymore. And even
No.
the federal representatives aren't saying that anymore.
No, they're saying nothing.
And they're saying nothing. That is correct.
Yeah. And I think what happened was when the cannabis movement began, okay, and I was, when did it begin? In 2009, something like that. Like
No, it was
everybody
out in
started to.
California, really. It was 1996. We passed our first medical law, and
Okay.
now there's a big movement in California. Obviously, it took a while to spread around, but that was where, you know, the true OGs were in the middle of it. You know, that's when some of the oldest guys, that a lot of them aren't with us anymore, really got started. You know, the Cannabis Buyers Club and you know, some of the legendary risk takers of the old days. That was 96 is when that all started.
Yeah, in 96 over here, everybody was too busy taking ecstasy
That's
and passing out, but whatever.
it. Molly was in the house.
Yeah, it was Molly, the year of the Molly. But you know, when it did really, you know, jump off here, I think, and this is why I said there's a lot more research that went on that we don't know about, is that they have gotten everything they can out of the plant. Yeah, they keep coming up with more hybrids and more flavonoids and more terpenes, and they do this and they do that. And you know what? We know what they do. We know what everything does, and they know what everything does. And they also know that if they can move to pharmaceuticals, okay,